Good evening. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters are people or beings that are making a big difference in the collective of the human species on our planet at this time of the Great Shift. And we have a wonderful guest again tonight. We're doing a series of four with Galexis, who's a coalescence of beings, a gathering of beings and consciousness, who's going to take you through some amazing reflections on what life is really like. So welcome to the show, Galexis.
You're certainly welcome as well, and it's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I'm very excited to continue our conversation from the show that we actually ran in January. It was we ended up talking a lot about oneness and how our species is going to, perhaps you could do a little recap, our species is evolving. Hopefully, those of us who choose to evolve, right?
Yes.
Into oneness. Would you like to give just a short explanation of what that is?
All right. Well, oneness is, of course, as you undoubtedly know, and those who are listening undoubtedly also know, is the awareness that everyone is part of the same substance, part of the same material of spirituality that is made up of God, Goddess, all that is, who is expressing itself or themselves in many different infinite forms, right? And so each human being, each one of you, is an expression of the divine that is channeled through a particular spark of consciousness or focus that is you. And so you are, and everyone else is, the same. You are all made of light. And part of this evolution is moving from a consciousness of separation, a sensing of, okay, it's me against the world, or it's me and my family against the world, or me and my tribe, or my culture, or my community is better than other people, or my team is better than the other team. Mm-hmm. And that sense of division and separateness is coming to a point where people more and more realize that regardless of what culture or what society you live in, you are human beings, and all human beings, indeed all beings on the planet, including animals, plants, insects, birds, including the elements, the minerals, are all part of the same substance, all part of an illusionary playground of light, all sorts of reflections of light that enable us all to play and to explore more of who we are. And we as Galexis, even though we are not physical, we do play in the illusion as well on other dimensions and many dimensions. But essentially, you've got the illusion as you know it as a physical plane, three dimensions, and the fourth dimension of time, space, the portal into the higher dimensions. Part of what's going on in the consciousness of the planet is the evolution from a third-dimensional consciousness, which in which you see the separation of different objects and the distinction of them, into fourth and fifth dimension, whereas you begin to be unlimited in your conceptualization and in your experience of space and time, where that limitation that you normally think of as space and time seem to dissolve, and you go into a place where you can experience the all, the fullness of it all, and that's where people can come to a lifting point, a peak experience, if you will, to understand that all is one. Mm-hmm. And because of the consciousness of the planet, because of this great shift that's unfolding, the level of consciousness from 3D into 4D into 5D, which has to do with the imagination, which has to do with a sense of intention, just creating instantly, in this movement, in this flow through this portal of time-space, because of the evolution, people are closer and closer to the portal. And so it takes less now at this particular time for people to have the peak experience of oneness. And because of that, the people who we call the first wavers, those of you who are really exploring your spirituality in a very dedicated and focused way, have come to a point where it will not require much at all to lift to that peak experience. That peak experience is going to be soon not much more than your everyday consciousness, and you'll be able to stay connected into that portal of time space, into the awareness of oneness, and from that place of oneness to be able to express yourself, to be able to apply the principles of oneness into your life, to integrate the concept and the knowing of oneness, to step beyond the sense of falling for always, the illusion, to being able to recognize it as illusion, to stepping into mastery on the physical plane, and therefore being able to open up your heart and to love without feeling this sense of separation, which brings with it a tremendous sense of polarity and lack of safety. So this whole sense of opening into fourth dimension and there on to fifth and sixth and seventh, which is that first octave of reality that you work with.
Is this what we were born into? Is this why we started our process here on the planet?
Well, yes. You have two missions. The first one is your personal mission, and that mission is self-realization. And you came into
for everyone?
What's that?
For everyone?
For everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, everyone is going to realize who they really are, which is that divine essence, that oneness. Everyone's going to come into oneness eventually. But there are some who are coming into oneness now.
I thought we were being prompted by the frequencies on the planet, right?
Well, but that puts you in a position of being rather into the responsive or reactive mode, which actually, if you think about it, you're actually creating a lot of this impetus, a lot of these frequencies. And you may be doing it even unconsciously because you are connecting to other first wavers. You're part of a wave, and you're reinforcing other people who are on their spiritual journey as well and exploring greater consciousness.
Well, that was one of my, that was just a moment, just want to say this thing.
Yes.
That was one of my intentions when I started to do radio, was to participate in sending waves out over the media. I thought that was a good solution.
Yes, and that's what we were about to say. We say, you are doing it deliberate, very consciously, overtly, and obviously with your show. All right.
Isn't that wonderful?
But we want to point out that even when you're not on your show, all right, even when your message and the message of your guest is not being broadcast around the planet, you on your personal everyday level, as you learn and as you grow, you are contributing to the increase of consciousness worldwide. So everyone listening, even though they may think, oh, I'm such a beginner compared to Veronica or Galexis or whoever it is, even at the very worst case scenario where a person thinks they're a beginner, those, even those, because of their intention, are pulling in fifth dimensional energy into their process and increasing the consciousness for everyone.
Isn't that wonderful to know? And there's something you mentioned last time we talked, which was that deep down, well, in our soul's journey, in our pursuit of this realization through our lifetimes on this planet, that we have a kind of a drive, do we not? Or can you explain again what the incentive is for us to keep going at it?
The incentive we have to keep pursuing our spiritual journey, even in the face of tremendous resistances, as it may appear to be, or difficulties or suffering or whatever, is all to bring to us an awareness from our reality as our partners, even when we do not acknowledge that our reality is in our partnership, because we may not be always functioning at that level. But nevertheless, seeing reality as your partner enables you to perceive that everything that happens seems to happen to you, or everything that comes your way is intended for you to understand more of yourself.
And to learn about what it means to create our reality.
to give yourself opportunities to expand your capacity to love, to touch, to heal, to expand your creative ability, to touch your soul's passion, to move forward, and so on. But what really motivates and drives everyone to continue doing their spiritual journey, continue working at it, is because somewhere everyone knows. Somewhere they know that there is an incredible, infinite amount of love. That everyone, in a sense, has a soul memory of having come from that oneness, having come from the divine essence, where there is a complete, absolutely incredible depth of safety, trust, love, joy, happiness, satiation of spirit, a sense of total, complete peace, power, and a sense of being cherished and being loved and being valuable. Mm. And so there's this memory there. Everyone is being called to one degree or another. Now, those of you who are working more deliberately, and such as you, Veronica, working more consciously and deliberately to move towards that, are the, what we call the first wavers. Mm. And first wavers are feeling the call stronger, it may appear, than other people. It just is that there is a certain wave where there's a certain network of individuals all around the planet that are lifting and being activated at the same time. And it's not that you're passively being activated. In a sense, it's part of what you chose to do. It's part of your personal mission, and as we said, the second mission, the global mission, and that's the participation to whatever degree that you wish to make it in the great shift.
Well, that's really a wonderful explanation. And going back to the beginning where all of us souls started to stream our creations through a series of lifetimes and through many lifetimes and a lot of tragedy and gain and all of that, are we coming to, this is how it feels to me, and this could be optimistic, are we coming to a time where we can burst out of that particular system and become sort of freer to live in a self-created, purposeful, self-created, intentional reality?
Well, actually, yes, you're in it right now. It has to do with your awareness that you're in a system of your own creation. Most people are not aware of it, you see.
Oh, I see. So
people think the illusion is all there is because they haven't had that peak experience of oneness that gives them the glimpse to the reality of how it really works. So they think, oh, physical plane, that's real. It's substantial, you know. There is separation. There is all this kind of aching loneliness that's down at the core of things, you know. That, otherwise, why would people have even created that whole concept of existentialism if they had known of the oneness, right? Mm. So people went through all of this kind of stuff. Now, we're saying it in past tense, but you have to understand that it is your focus here in the present moment of the eternal now that determines which lifetime you're in. Right now, your focus and the focus of all those who are listening to us is here in this present lifetime at this present moment. There is no past, present, or future. There's only the present. It's not a continuum of any sort.
Hmm.
That's why we say there's no past, present, future continuum. But there is a present, and it's the eternal now. And so all lifetimes are happening simultaneously. It just so happens your conscious awareness is focused in this lifetime right now. This is a lifetime in which you have an opportunity to return to the oneness, to return to the divine from which you came, to continue your glorious journey on non-physical realms, continuing into greater and greater, more expanding levels of love and joy.
Wow, I want that. So, but I guess I'm still in the linear mode. I'm going, well, Are we freeing ourselves? This is what we like to think we're doing, is freeing ourselves from the subconscious storage of all kinds of programs and patterns.
Yes.
Are we doing that, Galexis? Are
yes,
we
you are.
Succeeding?
You're doing that, even if it's in small increments, that it may not seem to be obvious to you. Just think for a moment. Think about who you are now, what your awareness is today, right now, at this moment. And then think about where your awareness was just 2 years ago.
Right. Very different.
You have made so much growth, you may not notice it because it happens, it seemingly, in very small increments. But the amount of shifting you've done in your consciousness to recognize and identify, you know, certain limitations of feeling, of reactivities to your reality, the way that you may continue seeing yourself as a victim and dismantling that to it's less and less and less and less and less. You keep taking off the darkest debris. It's like, you know, when you're mixing something, that the debris is lighter, it comes up to the surface and you skim it off, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and then it just, you keep churning it up and churning up, and more debris comes up to the surface and you skim it off. And you don't really notice it, but it's become part of your everyday process.
And this leaves us more available to mingle on the fourth and fifth dimensions as well.
What do you mean by mingle?
I keep praying and programming that I can have conscious activity in the fourth and fifth and even other dimensions and not be in the now here on this planet. And
well, yes, but you have to understand that if you utilize the parameters, or what you might say, the functions that are most prominent in those dimensions, you can utilize those consciously in the first three dimensions, i.e. the physical manifestation, the tangible world that you're in. For example, the fifth dimension, you use your imagination often.
That's true.
All right? Mm-hmm. And you have intention, your intentionality. If you're aware of your intent and you can imagine and dream and envision things, you're already bringing in fifth dimension consciously into your daily life, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, when you're actually out of body, for example, and you're able to expand your conscious awareness to its a more full and more complete level, to where you can truly see the parameters of a fifth dimensional reality from a fifth dimensional point of view, you'll see how much creativity you've got. You see how much imagination you've got. Now, sixth dimension is chaos and creativity.
Oh, my.
And as you've been noticing, and what's been going on in the planet has been tremendous amounts of chaos. When you imagine something, you imagine something beyond what you have. You don't just keep imagining the same old, same old.
No,
right?
We do not.
You stretch and you want to imagine more. You want something beyond. You keep stretching and stretching your imagination. And what that tends to do is pull you into chaos, because in order to get beyond those limits or boundaries that you've been behind, they have to break down.
Okay? That's right.
So on the physical plane, over the past year or two, has been a tremendous amount of breakdown of old forms and structures,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you're experiencing the chaos. What comes as a great gift in the breaking down of the old structures is stepping into the void, into the emptiness, into the unknown, and from there being able to create something new, you see? Mm-hmm. So in a way, you are, all of you are creating something new. You're recreating yourself. You're creating a new you.
Mm.
If you notice, the perception you have of yourself is probably where you've changed the most in the past couple of years.
Yes, you bet. That's right.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the focus of this whole consciousness shift, mm-hmm. is for you to come into a greater realization of who you are, to be happier with yourself, to love yourself more, to be in the oneness and the connection. And the first oneness is a connection with you and the divine within you. That's where the oneness really anchors in. So from there, you have in the chaos a breakdown of the old limitations. You can dream and imagine, and you can get creative. And in the creativity, things start to percolate, things start to happen, and then you move into the seventh dimension, which has to do with the the delineation. That's kind of a very limited term, but it's kind of the, or the definition, or the focus channel of energy.
Okay.
See, there's, it's, everything's made of raw energy.
Mm-hmm.
And this energy needs to be aligned, moved, and focused according to your will, your intent, your imagination, your creativity, and the new structures of self and awareness that you are building. So when you have that, then energy moves through it. And as energy moves through it, as long as you do not let it come into third dimensional limitation, as long as it stays fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh dimensional energy, you get incredible amounts of magic. In other words, what happens in your physical plane reality is awesome synchronicities.
Do you call it in, or do you travel in your imagination to it?
You can travel in your imagination. In meditation, you do all the time. Or even when you're doing something imaginative and you're in your kind of like brainstorm phase and you just really go out into the stratosphere and stretch and stretch and imagine and so on and so on. Yeah, you're consciously using your fifth dimensional energy, and this initiates this process.
Well, that brings me to energy healing, which is something I wanted to discuss with you. And you're talking about the seventh dimension. I'm going, is that where we not simply tap energy? I know that. But is that where we bring in what I'm thinking are the universal downloads of the new frequencies coming in?
Mm-hmm. Most of them come, in a sense, from there. There's a certain, in the eighth dimension, you've got a higher level of divine order. It's a, the octave is complete. It's integrated, and you begin another octave of dimensions. But that divine order that you come into in the eighth dimension is it channels through, and you know, from your concept, you think of dimensions as going up, right? You know, it's like heaven is up there in the sky here. So if you can imagine, use your imagination, it seems more like your energies are and frequencies and all sorts of things are coming down through the dimensions down to the first three.
That's right.
And there they manifest, right, into physical form. But in it's in the seventh dimension that you the raw energy, which has dropped down, so to speak, from eighth dimension, from the universal order of things, it's a higher universal order, not what you would might imagine with a linear kind of thinking, but the energy is there, the magic is there, it's an incredible potential. Now what you do is that as it you pull it down by calling it, and you call it from fifth dimension.
Oh, okay.
Fifth dimension calls it down, but in a sense you have to go up from fifth dimension to seventh, and you call seventh down to fifth, and then you drop it through the fourth, the portal of the fourth dimension, plunk down into manifestation.
And so is that where we source the energy that's used for energy healing? Well, I know that's not quite right.
In a sense, yeah, you could say that's a source. All energy, and this is physical energy, emotional energy, mental energy, psychic, spiritual energy, it all comes from the same place.
Okay, and the
it
force?
It is just channeled by its intention and use and function through different forms.
So, right? And also the force?
It all comes down through the force.
No,
the
I'm force saying...
The force is kind of like the, it's like an hourglass, right?
I was thinking, Alexis, I was being kind of cheeky, saying the force, like, may the force be with you, you know, from Star Wars.
Oh, that's a good one. Yes, may the force be with you. May the portal of the force, be available and big and wide and open for you to drop through all sorts of great stuff.
That's perfect, isn't it?
Right. Now, most people start their desire process in third dimension.
Okay.
Because you feel desire. But generally, in third dimension, your desire is for something tangible. Right?
Right.
It's when you allow yourself to stretch into the oneness, to tap the oneness, which starts at the fourth dimension, is the experience of the oneness.
Mm.
When you don't have the limitations of time, space, you begin to feel the oneness and begin to own and understand the oneness. That's when you step into the imagination. And as you can understand, you know, when you do a meditation, you're not bound by time and space in your meditation.
No, for sure.
You can go anywhere, do anything. You can go in any place in time, space, whatsoever. That's why some people do incredible amounts of healing work and spiritual sustenance work, gifting of energy and so on by doing it in meditation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not everybody's pathway to do it that way, and it's something that does not seem to show up tangibly, per se. But that's where you start calling the energies to focus intent and move through certain channels of function that are specific to you and your desires and so on and needs and all that to bring it down into that fourth dimension, and so it can plop into third dimension.
So I'm sitting here in a wonderfully comfortable green chair, and then I do my meditation, and I'm going up through the fourth portal, am I? Am I going through?
When you go into meditation, as soon as you close your eyes and you find yourself in another location,
mm-hmm.
you know, generally people, when they go into meditation, they go into either states of well-being where they bring in light and their energy field is all expanded and so on. Yeah, you've gone through fourth dimension already. You're in fifth.
Oh, my.
If you go and see yourself at a landscape, all right, mm-hmm. and you journey the landscape and do magical things and experimental things and meet your guides and whatever and talk to them, you're already there. You're already working on fifth dementia.
Hmm.
Right?
How exciting. And so as a species, I mean, we're moving, and you've explained it a little differently, but I'm thinking that we're moving up in frequency, and a lot of it is intentional and so on. Is our vehicle, our body, I'm thinking I'm working with the brain a lot of times to see whether we can create the release of the kind of chemistry it takes to heal certain things like addictions or infections or so on. I really believe that our brains have that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So do you see us, are we able to move our consciousness in such a way that this self-healing is really manifested at a greater level?
Oh, absolutely. The thing is, and this is something that people have been avoiding so far, and part of the reason that they don't really get very enthusiastic, and you might say, about really allowing that huge healing to take place, and why they have certain beliefs against it, is because people are totally frightened of the sixth dimension. Mm-hmm. They're totally frightened of life as they know it ending.
So that's the chaos dimension.
The chaos. They're frightened of the breakdown of the old system.
Oh, so you think that's... Which
translates very often into the breakdown of the old image of self.
Ah.
And so when people are faced with, let's say, a life-threatening disease, and yeah, they want to have complete and total healing, but they don't want to change their self-image. They're terrified that they'll lose themselves because their identification is with a limited self-image.
Hmm. And they can't face the void very easily, right?
And facing the void is just absolutely too terrifying because they don't love themselves.
Hmm.
Because their old image is that of a person who's victimized by the disease or has to struggle and suffer or has to work really hard and figure everything out and blah, 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 blah.
Who's carting the whole old paradigm along with them.
The old paradigm, the old story, the old self, mm-hmm. and in order to really have that kind of total turnaround, you have to be willing to absolutely drop the old identifications. And most people have no clue, number one, how to do it. They would be totally terrified to doing it mm-hmm. because it just seems to be so unknown, it seems to be death. So that just scares the dickens out of them. And so most people have so much dread about it that what they really want is to be all healed, and then they can go back to their life and their
exactly
body's just
as
in great
it was.
Shape, but
yeah.
they don't have to change.
That's right. Yes. That's very interesting, isn't it?
Right.
Well, I see kind of a rising of healing potential in so many humans.
Well, that's because people more and more are getting to this point where they're lifting up to experience the peak experience of oneness and bringing it more integrated into their daily life. Because as you do that, you realize, hey, it's not that far away, and I'm a much more expansive being, light being, and I don't have shame anymore. I don't have any self-judgment anymore. I am free. And as they begin to experience, I'm a free being, and I am loved, and I can love, and I am all, and I am everything and nothing, then all that old self-image, all that old stuff dismantles on its own.
And what happens to relationships when that begins to shift their paradigm?
Well, very often, this can be the beginning of an awesome healing of a relationship that has not been going well.
Oh, wonderful.
And if the mate or partner of the person going through the oneness experience is so terrified of change that they refuse to shift their perspective on anything, even if their mate has gone to a place of great freedom and joy, they'll get into panic and they'll resist. And sometimes it makes the relationship temporarily worse.
Huh.
Sometimes a relationship that's not working very well will get busted and it'll be over.
Mm-hmm.
And because the person who is entered into their freedom cannot go back to the box of the self that makes the other person feel safe.
That's right. I was just thinking that some people, when they feel that freedom, might be able to accept the other person, whatever they're doing.
Well, that's when there is the opportunity for extraordinary healing in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, relationships are so totally traumatized. And even you have very spiritual people, philosophical brilliance of concept and spirituality, and people who even go up and get a concept of the oneness. But then when they come back down, they don't bring the oneness so completely with them. They don't know how to apply it yet. Mm-hmm. That's part of what's going on right now, is people who are getting those transcendent experiences are trying to figure out, well, what the heck do I do now? How do I live my life in alignment with it? That's the great challenge of this decade.
Yes, because even though it's an illusion, it's still quite a challenging illusion at times, isn't it?
It's challenging because it's hard to let go of its reality and saying it's not really, you know, solid and real. It's just the illusion of it. It's hard for people to live knowing it's an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
They go into it, and then they get caught back into the same old games and traps and stuff like that. And then they can very easily fall back into the judgments. It shouldn't be like this. This person shouldn't treat me like this. I need my space. I can't deal with this and whatnot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I need to fix them. I need to tell them what's what. I need to enlighten them, you see?
Yeah.
And, of course, that doesn't help relationships one darn bit.
No.
Right? So what happens is that if a person who reaches that point of enlightenment comes back and says, okay, I am going to totally, totally love myself, totally accept myself, and I'm not going to take anything personally than anybody else does, because it's all illusion.
Well, that's a good one.
Then they can respond and interact in a relationship without feeling threatened, without feeling separate, without going into reactivity, without falling back into self-judgment or judging the other, or falling back into shame or panicking or trying to control or manipulate or go into victim and feel that they're being controlled and manipulated and trying to be nice and being on good behavior. This is what a spiritual person should act like, blah, blah, blah. They won't go into all of that kind of stuff, you see?
Mm-hmm. That's a be a real
very
treat.
Present, and they'll have no sense of unworthiness. They'll just be laughing at stuff, the craziness of the illusion. Wow, this illusion is a hoot. You see, and they won't be taking it seriously.
Or understand? Defending themselves or being threatened. That's
right,
a big
that's
deal,
that's why
isn't
people
it?
Say, why are angels, you know, lighter? Because they don't take themselves seriously.
Yeah, they take themselves lightly. Yes, I
they
like that
they take themselves lightly. And the same. And that's what people individually need to be able to do so that they can have compassion and love for the people that they interact with without going in any kind of defensive or reactionary mode.
I have a kind of an odd combination of questions here, which I'm thinking you might have already answered, but I'm going to go for it anyway because I think it's interesting and our listeners might like it. The brain, I'm fascinated by our brain lately because I know that its capacity is beginning to expand in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking a lot about oneness, which we hear about. And I know that the Diksha, which I went through an awful lot of that, is where the head is touched, and then the brain is able to hold a higher frequency energy, which is supposed to bring us toward oneness.
Yes.
And there's a lot of, you know, we're talking about the sixth dimension and confusion, and I'm going, there's so much Alzheimer's on the planet. There's so much brain being broken. You know, the parietal lobes, which are the lobes of the brain where you actually see things and get to higher consciousness if they're okay. But if they're broken, you go crazy, right?
Well, the parietal lobes have a certain sense of boundary awareness.
Mm.
And most people use them in third-dimensional reality. The most common way of using them is to force the self onto a perception of time-space as being linear.
Aha. Uh-huh.
All right? And that's why they can get very stuck. They can get very dense. And that's why the Diksha, or the oneness blessings, in a sense, make a shift in the parietal lobes so they can open up to a different way of organizing boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, for some people, it's going to be wonderful. It's going to feel so freeing, and they're going to feel healthier in their thinking processes and feeling processes. For other people, it'll be a temporary elevation. But it won't have realness or substance, and they'll go back to their, you know, safe little linear boundary conceptual reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, where the real growth, though, the real shift of frequency that's happening in the brain is going on, mostly is in the temporal lobes.
Okay.
The temporal lobes are on the side. In the temples are right outside the temporal lobe. And the temporal lobes have a lot to do with the interaction of the hormones, the nervous system on the physical level, and especially about dealing with emotions of the conscious, subconscious, and unconscious.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of physical pain too, right?
Well, it has some of that, but it comes more from emotional pain.
Mm.
All right? Mm-hmm. Physical pain can come from different sources, but the temporal lobe pain experience is that which is experienced through extreme frequency dissonance,
mm.
All right, which means that your concept of the reality that and the way the reality really is authentically for the self that you are really meant to be is in conflict.
Mm.
It is generally experienced by people who are wanting to go free, who want to lift and want to expand, but are feel very trapped, you might say, in their self-image and their limited emotions of the past.
Well, what's interesting about that is we have a terrific number of people on antidepressants, which I was reading have a lot to do with, for example, reducing physical pain, which could come from emotional pain that's in the temporal lobes.
Exactly, exactly.
So we suppress all that.
So many people are on antidepressants and various other mood-altering substances, whether they're legal or illegal or whatever, most of the people who are doing that are trying to bypass old, limiting, and painful emotional programs.
Mm-hmm. So then emotional that dissonance about who they really are versus...
That's right, yeah. Because it has to do with the self-image is still holding on to old impact of shame and judgment that comes from childhood or adolescence, or a sense of failure that comes from early adulthood or even, you know, even a couple of years ago or something. It's one of those things that holding on to an old self-image and trying to look at yourself through an old filter that's filled with pain and suffering and judgment.
Is that what Alzheimer's is about?
And loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
You see, this in a sense really stalls out the expansion of consciousness. And there has been so many philosophies over the centuries of spiritual development. The most obvious one, which is experiencing a grand renaissance, and it's typically the reason for that is like India. India held spiritual mystic path experience. They held it, in a sense, while the West was going through its logical linear revolution, right?
Mm-hmm.
And back in the 1960s, began to shine into the West, from the East to the West, right? And this is started a whole revolution of consciousness, people looking at consciousness. So whatever they did, like recreational drugs or whatever, consciousness, let's get more conscious,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, in a sense, it jump-started this. But the integration into the Western mind and also what was held alive in the Eastern mind had a certain sense of denial in it. And there was a denial of the material and the physical.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be separate from the material and physical, and I'm going to lift above the illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And this got translated in concepts of Zen and all sorts of intellectual conceptualizations and an intellectualization of the Buddhist teachings.
Right.
An intellectualization of teachings from the Hindu and the Sikh religion and others, and it's kind of intellectualized. And once again, nobody wants to deal with the emotions.
Right. And I remember they always called it the Maya is the illusion in the Eastern.
That's right. And there's,
but it's funny, we're dealing with a Mayan calendar, and that's a big deal. And I keep seeing
exactly.
that overlay.
And also, part of the Western culture has been that those who go spiritual deny themselves love, they deny themselves money, they deny themselves material things.
Yes.
And it dovetails so well in the East with all this sense of be desireless, do not want things, do not go after, you know, physical things, do not go after money and so on and so on. Human beings can't help it. They want to go there,
mm-hmm.
right? And so as a result, though, this type of conflict of distancing yourself, judging the world, and so it has created even more of a gap and created more pain and more trauma. And there's so many people who are feeling dissociated, who are feeling lost from their own desires, from their own motivations.
You think that has any link?
From their passion.
Any link with the sexual abuse in the Catholic Church that's really hot these days?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that happened in the first few centuries, initially, as the Catholic Church was founded in the first few centuries, priests could marry.
Ah.
In the early Christian church, there were even women who served as ministers.
Hmm.
But as it got adjusted and shifted into a male dominated system, these priests, males generally, started to accumulate tremendous wealth,
mm-hmm.
and they would pass it on to their children. And the church said, we want that.
Ah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So the church ruled that priests had to be celibate, which meant that they have to dedicate, that their only love, their only relationship is to be with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
But the concept of Jesus was so distorted and twisted as well,
mm-hmm.
that it didn't really work in a practical way. It separated people from their own passion, from their own souls, in a way.
Well, it sort of rebuked all the natural sensual drives and appreciations.
Exactly.
That we have.
And so that's part of a human being that has to be appreciated. The sexual drive was controlled in order to control the wealth of these priests.
Interesting.
So the priests would not make money anymore. This money would go to the church. right? It was a way of controlling. It was a way of disempowering those who could be a threat.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a sense, when it took away part of the person's physical life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really, we would say, it's not really very kind, loving, or fair
mm-hmm.
to expect Catholic priests to not have any sexual desires.
Right, it's pretty interesting.
We would suggest it's not even saintly to be desireless.
And it isn't even sane.
It's not sane.
No.
And so what are people going to do with all that energy that's cooped up in their second chakra?
Right.
What can they do with it? They don't have any outlet of creativity to channel it through. They're in total self-denial and subservience and submission of service.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it going to go? It's just going to burst out somewhere.
Right. So do you think that
it's distorted and twisted because the whole construct that they live within is distorted and twisted?
Well, spirituality has been distorted and twisted as it's been housed in dogmatisms and so on.
Yeah, and dogma is essentially has been based on fear
control.
And shame.
Yeah.
All right. So, worldwide, there's incredible amounts of shame, and shame has been used mm-hmm. as a threat. Shame and guilt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Used as a threat, and said these are sins or these are evil. You must be punished. You must be separated from good things. And so on. And you must appeal to the divine. You must appeal to the gods, or you must appeal to the priest, or to Jesus, or whoever it is, to save you, to forgive you your sins, to clear you, to free you, right? And so the church had control over this. And there's not just the Catholic Church.
No, it's all churches, really.
Basically all religions have mm-hmm. some way in which a person expiates their sins.
I know.
So it's set this whole thing up. For example, in India, you've got the whole caste system.
Yes.
And it's considered that the people of higher castes are more spiritually evolved, which makes no sense whatsoever.
No linear sense at all.
No linear sense. Yeah, it's a linear sense, yes, but no true sense, all right?
That's right.
And
well,
so as a result, people who are born in lower castes have tremendous shame over who they are.
Well, and before we run, and I agree with you entirely, before we run out of time, I want to throw in this about ETs. What are ETs? Who are ETs? Are we ETs? Are you ETs? Are these just beings of different levels of consciousness or different frequencies that we can associate with if we're good boys and girls? Actually, no, if we're able to retune our sensing devices so we can match their frequencies in order to communicate, and will they come here or will we go there?
All right. Well, there are ETs around you all the time.
I like that idea.
You don't see them because, yes, they may be in the same time, but they may not be in the same space. They work with fourth dimension and up.
They don't come into the third dimension?
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do. It's not their chosen thing.
Mm-hmm.
If they really want to come into experience third dimension, they will generally take birth.
Oh, I see. Okay.
All right. They will come and incarnate on the physical plane, and they will stay as a person, and hopefully they can remember their mission so that they can continue doing their observation or whatever they came to do.
Well, and
there are ETs who walk among you, and some of them don't even remember, because once you come into physical birth, mm-hmm. you tend to forget, right?
So we talked last time. It was very interesting to me, and I said to you, where did it all start? And we were talking about kind of the flow of souls through all of these different experiences and creations. But
right, and there's some ETs have been, all have been living on various and sundry planets, and they have very much longer life spans there than human beings do here, and they'll touch in on do a mission and leave. And there's a lot who are observing, and there are a lot who are watching and waiting and helping out when they're asked, very much like spirit guides.
Well, and what about being hybrid, being ET and human? Have they, the sons of God married the sons of man? We've heard that sort of thing in history.
That happened like 100,000 years ago, though.
Oh, okay.
That's when the space where the ETs specifically came and put and did genetic experiments and put their genetic material into what was the humanoids at that time.
Mm.
You know, the low functioning human like being.
Hmm.
That you would say would be, you know, terribly primitive. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There's this gap, and they can't find how in the world suddenly they come from the Neanderthal into the Cro-Magnon. You know, mm-hmm. they don't have a clue, but the Cro-Magnon is modern man and has a different genetic makeup.
Hmm.
Now, they haven't really discovered that, but in a sense, consciousness and more soul presence was given to the human being.
Hmm. Well, we're going to have to end this just because of time, but I believe we're going to do round three, and we may take off on the ET situation and the infusion.
That might be a fun place to begin.
That'd be wonderful, because there's so much exchange that I like to
explore. Oh, yes,
explore.
And so much more to come.
Yes, we're going to learn a lot about that. So, Golexis, it has been an absolute pleasure to spend this time with you again, and would you like to give the website? And
all right. Well, the way for people to explore what we do and who we are and the type of messages that we share is to go to the website, which is GolexisSpirit.com. That's the two words put together, GolexisAndSpirit.com. And there's plenty of there to explore. There are sound files to listen to. There's all sorts of things.
And is your itinerary where you're going to present next? Is all of that there as well?
Yeah, that'll be in, with events. And then you have sound files of previous events that you can subscribe to and listen to, archives and things like that.
And tell me this, Golexis, do you have fun?
Do we have fun?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. We wouldn't do this if we didn't.
What's the most fascinating thing about being consciousnesses that we learn from?
Well, as the conscious group that we are, we merge into one. We're having an interesting time finding out how to merge and utilize the oneness while remaining our distinct, unique selves within the group and how to function as a individual. Well, that's very fun. But the most fun that we do have in the process of talking with human beings is to watch their energy fields as we talk to them, to see the ahas, to see the lights change, to see the colors shift, to see the light sparkle and brighten, to appreciate the incredible amount of love, the incredible amount of craving for the divine that the human beings have, to see the call of their soul in their spirit. You see,
oh,
it's just
an
absolute thrill for us.
Well, maybe you can create like a Curlian camera so we can watch through your eyes.
Yeah, perhaps it would be a little bit too complex for that.
So I must say thank you so much, and I send you much love. This has been just a wonderful experience, and I sure look forward to our next one.
Well, you're most welcome, and it has been a fabulous, fun time for us as well. And it's always a pleasure, dear Veronica, to speak with you.
And to you, and many blessings to Ginger and Daniel as well. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Farewell.
All right. Farewell. So that was Golexis, and you can contact them through GolexisSpirit.com. And this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to be in touch with me, it's Veronica@VeronicaEntwistle.com. And in the meantime, well, let's pop up to the fifth dimension and call in, or even the seventh dimension, and call in some energies and love and send them back out to all of you. Paradigm shifting, feel the wave. Good night.